Welcome everybody to the Spawn On Me podcast. I'm your host, Khalif Adams. This is episode 199 of our show. Shout out to everybody in the chat. Shout out to everybody in podcast land. So happy that you are here rocking with us tonight. And I'm here with my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow, the man who makes everything look good. It is Sharif Jackson of SharifJackson.com. How are you doing, sir?
It all looks good. Even though, like, I don't know if my mood looks good. Then I got a new car and I'm not excited. I've had to drop loads and loads of money on various things that are not video games. Holiday season is in full effect, y'all. Full effect.
It is in the fullest of effects. It is working its way into all of our hearts and our wallets. It is doing what it needs to be doing. And I am kind of here for it. I don't know if I'm fully here for it yet, but we'll have a little bit more discussions about that in 1 second. I'm going to also introduce and bring to the stage my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow, the newest guard on your New York Knicks, coming up behind Tim Hardaway Jr., and Ramon Sessions and John Starks.
Wow.
It is Cicero Holmes. How are you doing, sir?
Damn. I mean, I'm only older than two of those people that you talked about.
But how do your knees feel?
Yo, so actually my knees feel damn good. So that's all right. But every time I stretch them every now and then, it sounds like bubble wrap is popping. But wow. I mean, but they're dope. They really are dope. They're like... My knees sometimes sound like the old school action figures when you bend the knees to a certain point and then they go a little bit further and they'd be like click, click, click. So sometimes they sound like that, or maybe like a roller coaster as it's ascending up the hill. So sometimes they sound like that. Yeah, sometimes they sound like that. But don't see me on the court. I may be fat, but I got skills, son.
Yeah,
these handles never lose these handles.
Well, so wait a minute. So okay.
Well, I didn't see you stop LeBron. I mean, you should have been out there with Enes Kanter.
Nah, Enes got it, yo. Yo, I was like, I almost broke my TV because I was chest bumping. Shout out to Enes Kanter, yo.
Shout out to chest bumping your TV.
Yeah,
like,
yo.
That's some real shit right there. Yeah, exactly. That's some real fan stuff right there. It's like, yo, I chest bumped my TV.
Yes, yes. Boom. Damn. What, son? We did it.
There's one person.
Shout out to Easy Peasy for calling me Cicero Clicky Holmes. I like that. Clicky.
Shout out to Easy Peasy. Mad love to you.
Yeah.
I feel like there's one person in the league who I would not want to chest bump, and that is like Russell Westbrook. Because he does everything hard.
Yeah, he does.
So I feel like he like talks hard. He walks hard. He would have chest bumped me and like cave my chest in.
Yeah.
And that would not be fun because I would just be like, oh, I was trying to give you love and you put me in the ICU. Like, that would not be dope. Like, my clavicle is broken.
It's that ICU love, son.
ICU love.
Right. And then he'll give you cupcakes. Shout out to cupcakes.
Oh, no, we don't want any of that. Well, yeah, cupcakes. Yeah, please send us cupcakes. That would be dope. I would love that. I need some more sugar in my life. The sugars. So, yeah, shout out to everyone again in the chat. Shout out to everyone listening on the show. Thank you for listening to the last episode. I again want to apologize. We had some technical difficulties and Audacity was like, nah, son, Audacity chest bumped my computer and killed the damn file. So, you know, the quality wasn't at our usual Spawn On Me best, but we're going to rectify that this week. So we have a lot of cool stuff to talk about. This week, we're going to do a couple of cool things, something that I know Cicero has been really excited for. He's been talking this up for a couple of weeks because we're getting into the holiday season and Saint Cicero is going to bring to you at least part of our buyer's guide for 2017.
I mean, Bricargo was talking about it. The streets is talking. Bricargo wants a buyer's guide. We've got some new consoles. We need to talk about them.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff that's out there. So if you're looking to be able to find some good stuff to share with the people that you love, the gamers in your life and the non-gamers in your life, you want to bring them over to the dark side, here's a way that you'll be able to get some information so that you can share that stuff with them. But before we jump into that, we'll do that after the break. We're going to get into a little bit of news. There's a bunch of stuff that happened this week, but we're only going to kind of dig into a couple. The first one that we are definitely going to talk about has been the Star Wars 2 Battlefront controversy that popped up over the week. Was it beginning of this week?
Yeah.
When I think it went into EA Access and a lot of people got their hands onto it to begin with. Who wants to jump in on that first? Because it's been madness online right now. It's been off the chain with people losing their shit.
I'll start off by saying that I was confused by this because I've been playing the game since last Thursday. If you guys remember from last week's show, I talked about playing it very briefly and you know, not really enjoying it. There's been a lot of crazy outrage. The most downvoted post on Reddit ever.
Yeah.
In history. the game doesn't officially release until tomorrow. If you guys are here in the Twitch stream, if you're not here in the Twitch stream, why aren't you here in the Twitch stream? But, you know, it'll be out November 16th. And, there's lots of stuff that's happening. Reef, you're good with the news. This is nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, it's nonsense on a couple of fronts. One is that this whole thing started because when the trial, if you have EA or Origin Access, began, you know, people started looking at the amount of credits that you earn through normal gameplay, and then they calculated that it would take, you know, something like 40 hours to unlock every single person. And to me, like, I feel like judging a game by how long it takes you to unlock everything is a little ridiculous. I don't think it's representative of a lot of gamers that say, like, my enjoyment to this game is tied to me, like, unlocking every, I don't know, skin in Assassin's Creed, or like every pair of sneakers in 2K or something like that. Right. Like, you find something you like and you rock with it, you know? Mm-hmm. But with that said, I think what really, got my attention was not the unlocking everything, but the fact that the people at the highest level were obviously the people that you really wanted, mainly Luke Skywalker and Anakin Skywalker. Spoiler alert, Anakin is Darth Vader, Kyle, sorry.
Stop playing, for real?
For real?
Yo, for real, for real? Yeah.
And Jar Jar Binks is a Sith Lord, but that's a whole other story. People were upset because, like, they were like, you know, this game was openly advertised to, you know, have these huge battles between, you know, people of different eras, and they felt that it wasn't representative if it took you that long to unlock it through normal gameplay, or, you know, by buying things called crystals, which help to increase your credit earning potential. So, you know, when that happened, I was like, I mean, they have a point, but not a point to get so antsy about. Right, but right. EA's response, I thought, was very interesting because, number one, they cut the amount of credits it takes to earn Luke and Darth Vader by 75%, which is just insane.
Right.
So now it takes about 10 hours to unlock of normal gameplay, as opposed to 40, which is just a huge difference. Ka, the late breaking news agent he is, let me know, EA also removed the ability to buy these crystals from the storefront, which means the only way to progress is by playing the game. That there's no, like, you know, like, you can't buy, like, you can't pay to win. Which is kind of weird because it's just a character, but whatever. I just thought that this was just another one of these sort of, you know, gamer revolts that sort of has some merit, but the way it happens and is executed is always super messy and super unprofessional and just super ugly. Like when you had things like death threats and, you know, and like that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just, it's like one of those things where on the one hand, I'm like, well, you know, maybe EA really got called out on their shit because they were really just, they were exploiting people and incentivizing people to, you know, to buy the crystals by setting the amounts that high.
Right.
But on the other hand, I'm like, you know, if you like the game, like you like the game, like your excitement for the game shouldn't be based just on that. And it shouldn't be like, I love this or I hate this. Why don't you say, hey, like this game is a cool man. It sucks. I can't get Vader in here, but hey, I got, you know, Finn and like I got, you know, everybody else in there. So I don't know. It's like one of those just multiple sides, but I'm glad that, you know, that like EA has kind of come to his senses a bit with the pricing, and I'm hoping that other companies kind of look at this and, you know, make sure that you can progress at a reasonable rate. And I know we talked about that with like NBA 2K and like a few other kind of franchises as well. I think I've heard things about that with Call of Duty as well, which I haven't played, but I know that the fact that loot boxes rain down on the beaches of Normandy to me is hilarious.
Literally,
yes. Yeah, like, literally fall out of the sky.
Like they literally fall out of the sky. Like yes. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah. So yeah. Kai, what's your thoughts on all this?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because we have so many things that are in play. The thing that I heard first wasn't even the actual fact about the kind of ratio from time to money that was in there, or time to gameplay that was in there. It was the death threats that I heard about first.
Right.
Where, you know, devs were being talked about and being threatened and all that stuff. And I was like, man, are we here again? Like, we've gotten back to this again, because it feels so cyclical that you can count it at this point. It's like once a thing happens, people are going to overreact and lose their minds about it. But the weird thing is, like, if people are familiar with the way that Battlefront plays, the things that people are really complaining about right now are so insignificant to the way that that game actually works, because all it does is give you a temporary buff, at least when you're talking about the heroes, right? The heroes part is one part of that, where you get a temporary buff where you get one of the like iconic heroes from the series to play as until you die, until you gain enough in-game battle credits to get another one of those people, which is not easy. It's not like you do that thing often enough in a match where you probably get it once every match. So people are like wilding out about this one insignificant thing. I can understand when it comes to better equipment, that is a thing that you could have purchased before they pulled it and stripped it out of the game. But I feel like this is again like one of those weird things where the people who are really upset about this don't understand just how privileged they are. Now, mind you, EA definitely has kind of flipped the script on this, where yes, it was really, really expensive. And even there was some talk about the preview copies that press had gotten where the numbers were significantly lower. And then as soon as it hit, not retail yet, but it hit the EA version, I mean, the EA Access version that Cicero was talking about, how those numbers were inflated a whole bunch from that move, from that first step to that first step, which then made it really bad because people were just like, what the hell is this? What the hell is happening here? Right. So I feel like people need to kind of just slow their roll on this. I feel like EA hasn't done themselves any justice or any favors by looking like they don't know what they're doing. But it also feels like this overreaction is going to set another bad precedent, because we've seen them have to flip so hard and do such a 180 on this that it feels like, I'm not going to use the slippery slope because I don't think it's that, but I think it's one of those things where you want the companies to be able to put forth an idea and put forth a plan. It just seems like the plan that they had was really poorly, was poorly executed. And that poor execution is biting them in the ass a bunch. So I don't know what they're going to do besides they've already done one action. They did two actions in the past 48 hours, which was the reduction and now the removal. But I don't know how that then changes the game itself. Like, what does that mean for that game? Which is the thing that I'm more interested in trying to figure out. See, what do you think? Because like they pulled out basically microtransactions from it, or at least crystals, which were this one currency that would help you kind of like craft stuff. Where do you think the game is going to go now? Do you think this is going to bring people in where they feel like they have been able to kind of see that they've changed their minds on this and want to kind of be better about it? Or do you feel like now that since they've botched it, it's kind of dead in the water?
It's not dead in the water because of Star Wars. Star Wars prints money. That's, you know, I mean, that's, let's get that out of the way. You've got a tentpole movie exactly a month away. And as soon as that comes out, and, you know, kind of what I talked about last week, which is that Star Wars will be out. Star Wars will be on everyone's mind come the Christmas time. And for those parents or grandparents or, family members that are looking for a gift for their favorite gaming person, Phil, and if they don't know what to get them, Star Wars is an easy and safe bet that they'll like. So the game will be purchased and the game will sell well. Whether or not it will resonate with players, whether it will have a tail, is something that is completely different. And the other thing is that we talk about this from the perspective of being gamers or talk about it from the perspective of games media, but we don't talk about the corporate perspective of this. And it's clear to me that there was a directive out of EA, EA corporate, that each and every one of their games has to be able to, you have to be able to monetize above and beyond downloadable content, above and beyond season passes. You have to be able to monetize in smaller amounts to get people to spend, to get them on hooked on the drug that is microtransactions.
Yep.
And you know, that is a directive that they're not going to steer away from. It's a directive that no gaming company gaming publisher is going to steer away from. It is just we kind of have to as an industry, we have to kind of get used to the fact that microtransactions are going to be here and they're here to stay. Whether where the line is drawn is with the individual consumer. Are you going to be a person that spends $2 that turns into $20 that turns into $200 on a particular title or a particular franchise? Or are you going to say, you know what? Nah, that's all right. I'd rather grind. You know, it's worth more to me to grind and not pay for this particular game. And maybe you'll find games because, you know, even in my life, there are games where, you know, 2K comes to mind, where I give myself a little steroid injection of 20 or 30 bucks just so that my guy is good enough to compete at whatever the level is.
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Blitz the League.
Right. Hey, you know. Well, so the thing is, Blitz the League, you got steroid injections that didn't cost you anything.
That's true.
But, you know, for the sports titles, and that's, you know, and this is the model that especially EA has seen how lucrative microtransactions are in all of the EA sports titles with all of the Ultimate Team stuff, people going out and buying packs. There are people that spend literally thousands of dollars every year to make sure that their FIFA Ultimate Team is the very best that it possibly can be.
I want to bring up a quick thing that someone said in the chat.
Yeah.
Sports Gamers Online.
Yes.
Definitely follow them on YouTube. One of the best sports gaming sites on the planet.
Shout out.
They said loot boxes are gambling. Ultimate Team pack openings are gambling. None of them should be allowed to be done by anyone under 18. I kind of want to dig into that really quick before we jump back to what looks like the general manager at DICE, Oscar Gabrielsson, put out a statement, which I want to come back to. But I want to jump back to the idea about loot boxes being gambling.
I think that's an interesting statement. Yeah. I respectfully disagree. And like, I understand it. So I respectfully disagree while saying that it triggers the same function in the brain. So it goes into the brain and it tries to give you that same endorphin rush,
right?
That gambling does. But the difference between gambling as we know it to be and these loot boxes is that gambling denotes that you are risking your money for the chance of getting more money. And with these transactions, whether it be microtransactions in games like Battlefront 2 or Call of Duty World War 2 or you know, Ultimate Team, and you know, in these, all of these Ultimate Team modes where you're buying packs of cards and you're opening the packs of cards, the difference here is that you know going in that you're not going to receive a monetary award greater than what you've already put down. Mm-hmm. Now, the value of the thing that you receive may make the value proposition of spending whatever money that you spent worth it to you. But that is a personal valuation. And at no point are you going to be able to concretely say, I spent $2 on the slot machine and it gave me $20. That's never going to happen. But you could, in theory, let's say it's a game like Destiny, Destiny 2, you could put down $2 for a legendary gem and wind up, or engram, and wind up with the exotic that you actually wanted, which is worth it to you. But that is something, you know, if we bring it back to the Ultimate Team, that gamble, it is a gamble, but it's not gambling. That gamble has been done for generations with any kind of sports cards. You buy baseball cards, you're buying a pack to see if in that pack.
You stole my example, you bastard.
Right. And, you know, that's what I do. That's what I do. You talk long enough, you steal everybody's examples. But, you know, if you buy that pack with the hope that you are going to get something of value in that. Or, you know, we could talk about Pokemon cards or Magic the Gathering cards or any of those other things. We've watched the viral videos of the dude opening the Magic cards and getting like this super duper valuable, mythical, that was worth $35,000.
I'm sorry. What was that?
It was the whoop-a-da-ba-da-whoop-a-da-ba-da-ba. You know, it was worth like $35,000.
I see them steroids just kicking right.
Yeah. It was incredibly valuable. Now, in that case, he could take that card and sell it for way more than what he bought. But it's something tangible and something physical. In this digital world, that gamble is just a gamble on hoping that the RNG, the random number generator, gets you the thing that you were coveting with the money that you spent.
Reef, any last kind of touchstones on the gambling part?
I mean, I agree with C. I don't think it's gambling. I think video games in general are designed to give you those feelings, those rushes, the endorphins. Entire game mechanics and development are based on that. I think loot boxes are just another wave of that, but like C says, the same thing as, you know, grinding a freaking Destiny 2 strike over and over to try to get, you know, a specific piece of loot. It's the same thing as, like, you know, any kind of RNG in any game. So I don't see any difference. It's just a little more in your face now, because, you know, they're not kind of hidden in the background anymore. It's a literal box. You know, it's a literal box. Right. You know,
I do wonder though, because you see in Asia that a lot of the games that have loot boxes and things like that, they put somewhere like in the fine print, or not even actually, because it's by law, I think, in some games where you have to basically share the odds of you getting the thing that you're looking for.
Okay.
Which I don't think would even change the conversation here.
Nope.
I don't think it would change any of that stuff. Because again,
it didn't change it in Asia.
I mean, well, I don't think that's I wonder what the conversation is in Asia when it comes to these games. Like, if the gaming culture there just understands that what they're doing is what they're doing, as opposed to what I feel like we have here, which is this constant fight against unrealistic expectations. And well, that's the thing that constantly is causing these controversies to be a thing, where people feel like they are entitled to the thing because they spent money.
Well, it's this selective amnesia that we have is because when the platform changes, they think that the rules change. But all that's happening, and again, this is something that I said either last week or the week before, where, you know, we've seen this happen already in the mobile space. There have been microtransactions in the mobile space forever, since, you know, essentially since there have been mobile games, and there are loot boxes littered through those games. And now the publishers are seeing the success that those smaller developers are having by making these free to play games or low paying games with these loot boxes, with the ability to pay a nominal fee to get whatever the tchotchke or knickknack is, whatever the currency is within that game, for the gamers. Like, you know, it's just a value proposition, and it's not going to be a thing where the government comes in and regulates it, because mm-hmm. these are consoles. You know, someone in the chat's talking about that. These are consoles where you already, in order to play these games online, you already need to pay money. And if you've got either a credit card signed up or you signed up with a card, there has to be someone who's an adult, presumably, who mm-hmm. has allowed their card, some form of payment, to be charged at the behest of the consumer who is consuming that content at that particular moment. So you have taken on the responsibility as the consumer to say that I will pay those charges, and that I'm responsible for the money that I spend while I'm involving myself in this pastime that is gaming.
Yeah, there was a really good comment in the chat from Video Dante. Shout out to Dante, another amazing writer up in the space. Definitely check out his work. He says, respectfully, don't you think that just because it's the standard loot boxes, risk reward stuff, gambling like mechanics, that it's still shitty? I'm not sure that just because it's the standard means it's good or acceptable. It's still preying on the same drives that drive gambling.
Sure.
I will say yes. Like, it totally is.
Right.
It totally is the same thing that's there. But I feel like, just like gambling, there has to be a level of self-control.
Absolutely.
And there has to be a level of, unless you are addicted and you don't know that you have this addiction, I think that sometimes that takes a turn where you get to that level and you see that you've gotten too far in, and you're like, well, I'm here now, and you don't need that until you get some kind of outside help. But I think for the most part, these are things that people wind up complaining about when they totally have the option to not partake in it. And I feel like that's the part that has always been my issue, is that people feel like they have to do a thing when they literally don't have to.
Right.
You don't have to spend money for this stuff to get the same rewards.
Right.
The rewards are there. You have to grind for them, or you have to play for long periods of time to get those things. Again, like, can you change and adjust the ratios in which the time spent to get to that thing is more beneficial to the player? Absolutely. That's the thing that I think most game developers are trying to figure out, if they're not trying to be predatory. But I think that the idea that just because loot boxes, to a certain extent, are in the marketplace, that they have been kind of bad. And I'm not saying that that's the point that you're trying to make, but that they have become more of the norm, and that norm is not a good thing because it promotes gambling. I don't think that that's necessarily the case. But I want to read really quickly before we switch
sure.
Topics. The message that Oscar Gabrielson, the general manager at DICE, said today on Twitter. It says, as we approach the worldwide launch, it's clear that many of you feel that there are still challenges in the design. We've heard the concerns about potentially giving players unfair advantages, and we've heard that this is overshadowing an otherwise great game. It says in big, bold yellow text, this was never our intention. Sorry we didn't get this right. We hear you loud and clear, and we're still turning off all the in-game purchases. We will now spend more time listening, adjusting, balancing, and tuning. Right. This means that the option to purchase crystals in the game is now offline, and all progression will be earned through gameplay. The ability to purchase crystals in-game will become available at a later date, only after we've made changes to the game, and we'll share more details about that while we work through this. So it feels like the internet won in some ways, where the thing that people were complaining about got fixed. It got fixed in a way that I'm sure some people may not even like, because I'm like, hey, if they're the people who wanted to spend their money and give EA their money to try to get the upper hand or whatever that may be, those people are now kind of screwed out of the equation. And again, like, I've played enough Battlefront in the past couple of hours and days, the way I feel like the loot system, although people feel it was pay to win, it doesn't adjust for skill, and it doesn't adjust for some of the other things that you see kind of being the equalizer in the way that game plays. So I don't know. It's a really interesting thing. I think that there is a little bit of hypersensitivity to loot boxes now and to microtransactions. And I feel like that also needs to kind of get tamped down a little bit. Like, people need to, like, put on their grown people pants and be like, yo, I don't have to spend the money for this thing. So it's an interesting, very interesting thing. And I'm hoping to see more about how that changes in the future. With that said, that was a mouthful. Ooh, boy. But yeah, again, as always, the chat is lit and definitely has some really great points to share. One of the things that will probably be lit that's going to happen in another 20 days, it will not be better than the Spawnies, but we're going to talk about it anyway. The Game Awards, Jeff Keighley coming through full force again, doing his thing. Trying to make video game award shows relevant again. He's trying to MAGA his video game awards. we have a pretty long list of games. And again, like, 2017 has been fantastic. 2017 has been stellar in the way that these games have been pushed out and the caliber of games. So it's going to be really hard for a lot of people who are going to be voting for these things to be able to get their votes in. I kind of want to go over, I'm going to let Reef go over some of the nominees for some of these categories, because it's pretty rough. I don't want to be the person voting for some of this stuff. So you want to go through some of those, Reef? That would be fantastic.
Sure. Yeah. First of all, there's some pretty interesting categories here. One that I really like that is being implemented and that people are kind of talking about in the conversation is best ongoing game, which is essentially, like, you know, not necessarily a game that came out this year, but a game that's still actively getting, you know, patched and, you know, updated and that has a community. And they have, for the nominees, they have Warframe, Rainbow Six Siege, Overwatch, GTA, which, God, this game is, yeah. I think by now it's like,
well, GTA Online is a thing, and it's a platform unto itself, man.
Yeah, it's its own thing. Destiny 2 and PUBG. So I like that they're acknowledging the fact that, you know, there are some people where this is their game, this is what they play.
Right.
You know, and I like that these games can continue to get shine. It's not only about, you know, what you do in your first 3 months and that's it, you know?
Right.
Because I think that devs should get props for making games that last the test of time, you know? I think that probably the thing that I've seen the most conversation about is game of the year, but the conversation is a little different this year. I mean, usually it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, like, why, you know, like, there's some sort of a consensus. This year, there's been a lot of talk because PUBG is nominated for Game of the Year. and there's a lot of talk that it's not yet. It's an early access game.
Right.
It's super buggy. It's right. not really polished. And that people's experiences and sort of the emergent gameplay is really what's driving it. Compared to, you know, Zelda, Persona 5, Horizon, and Mario Odyssey, which are these four, like, super polished, finished, like, epic kind of games, you know? Right. So I've seen a lot of talk on different podcasts and think pieces of about, like, if it's fair that PUBG is taking the spot that could go to another game that is, quote-unquote, finished. I kind of don't think PUBG should be nominated, and it's not because I don't enjoy it as much as other people, but I do think that your game should have to be, like, out.
Right.
Like, even if it's out and shitty, like, it's got to be out. Like, I feel like I feel like that's a real base requirement that is not that hard to, you know, put down, you know? And yeah, and like I think PUBG I guess it's gonna get an official release when the Xbox version comes out, like it'll be out of early access and be like a retail game, but I do kind of question it being there as well, and I'm trying to put my personal feelings about it to the side. What do you think about any of the nominees and anything, or like PUBG for Game of the Year in particular?
Well, I completely agree with you. I haven't had a chance to play PUBG. I don't have a PC that can play it. I'm waiting for December to roll around to play it on my Xbox One X.
Oh, hell no.
But shut your mouth. I completely agree that in order for your game to be nominated for Game of the Year, it's got to be a full retail release. Whether that retail release is all digital or it's physical and digital or physical only, it's got to be released. Because, you know, there's no telling what that game is going to be when that game is finally available. It could be a completely different game, you know, by all rights. They could completely change what that game is. I think it's premature. I mean, I do think that there is something to be said about a game that is garnering that much positive attention that before it's actually released, people are saying it's the best game that they played this year. That's definitely a positive, but I'm not too worried about that game winning, because there are there are four titles. The other four titles that are up there were games that were generationally transcended.
But PUBG, I think, has dominated the conversation, at least on the level of those. I would argue more than most Persona, of them, except maybe Zelda.
Right.
PUBG has been a constant in the conversation for a long time.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. If it does win, I think that would be kind of a travesty for Game of the Year for a game that it releases. You know, like what if it releases and it's a top down strategy? My point is that the game is not officially released yet, so the game could change into anything. So it's just a really weird thing to me. The addition that I do like this year, besides Best Narration, which I think was a title, which was a category last year, is the Best VR AR game.
Right.
And we've finally gotten to a point where you can put up five games that are more than just tech demos that you can sit back and say, hey, these were great experiences in this space, in this very, very unique space that we have. I do have a bone to pick. This is a bone that I've had to pick since the inception of the Game Awards, and that is in the that the racing and sports titles categories are mixed together again. And it's,
yeah,
it's,
I don't like the fact that they do that.
Right, I don't like it either. You know, obviously you can make the argument that racing is a sport, and sure it is, but it's a category all, you know, unto itself. Again, in the inaugural Game Awards, the racing slash sports game of the year was Super Mario, or what's that? Mario Kart, yeah, whatever, seven, whatever it was at that particular time. But it, you know, it really kind of spits in the face of, now, had that won the best racing game, then, you know, sure, no problem. And then you give the sports games their due, but it spits in the face of the sports titles.
I agree.
And the not insignificant number of sports gamers out there. Shout out to Sports Gamers Online. You know, shout out to the OS community. I mean, there are people that just play sports games, and these sports games that come out are incredibly, incredibly, incredibly deep and detailed and worthy of their own category. And I wish that the games industry en masse gave sports games the respect and the attention that they deserve.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of weird things kind of in the space in the Game Award kind of categories. Now, I shouldn't say a lot of weird things. There are just some things that kind of just poke out to me right off the bat. Like, one of the categories is, and we can't talk shit about categories because we have like a category called the Snot Bubble Award.
Right.
So it's like, I can't talk shit about that. But like, one of the categories that I came across speaking about PUBG is best ongoing game. What does that even mean? Well, I like the fact that they have like small blurbs underneath the like actual name of the category, and it says awarded to a game for outstanding development of ongoing content that evolves the player experience over time.
I don't have a problem with that. Right. I don't have a problem with that category at all. Like, you know,
it just feels weird.
Look at Grand Theft Auto Online.
Best DLC.
It's not DLC. I mean, it literally is DLC. You download that content, but this is a game that if you bought GTA on the previous legacy consoles, and then again on this generation of consoles, you spent $60 on that game. And three years ago, you spent $60 on that game. And if you go into GTA Online right now, it is a completely different experience. And the way that for those of you who are not well versed on GTA Online, just mm-hmm. do a little bit of digging and see what the community is doing with that. They have motorcycle clubs. There are guys that role play as cops. The amount of stuff is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
The amount of stuff that they do in that game, and the amount of support that game has gotten for the initial, I mean, you know, we were just talking about microtransactions and loot boxes and all that other stuff. The amount of support that game has received for that initial $60 investment 3 years ago, if you bought the game at launch on this generation of consoles, is phenomenal and definitely worthy of recognition.
Agreed on that. Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, like, I like Battlegrounds being in that also feels weird. Like, it feels like it maybe should be better in that category, if anything, but it also feels like...
Is PUBG in that category as well?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It's weird because it feels like the category is how to keep players in your game.
Yeah.
The award.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I feel like is a thing that you should be doing anyway. People doing it better than other people, like Destiny, I don't think should be in that category. Because that's like, all that stuff is coming through DLC packs that... Again, is like we're building out our game in a way that is piecemeal in that particular case.
But a lot of games try that and it doesn't work.
Right, right, right.
Well, I mean, you have to have a hook, right? You like mean, the hook.
Ubisoft tried that with two other Tom Clancy titles, and it didn't stick the way. Right, and For Honor, and it didn't stick the way that it is with Siege. Warframe is free to play, and people have been playing that game for 4 years. When did Destiny come out? Because Warframe was out right before Destiny, 4 years ago, and people are still playing Warframe. Overwatch is another game where Warframe, you know what though?
If there's any game that deserves to win that category, Warframe, it's absolutely Warframe. Because Warframe has changed. Talk about a game that has changed in multiple ways over the years. Mm-hmm. That game was dead in the water, came back and did a whole bunch of really cool stuff. So that deserves something.
I mean, you just made the case for the category. You said you hate it.
I hate that. I hate the name of the category. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Another thing I have beef with.
What do you call it?
I don't know. There has to be another name for it. I just don't like the name of that category.
The I Can't Quit You game.
That would be our version of that. Right. Like if we were to do that for the Spawnies, that would be perfect name for it. December 14th, Spawnies, Twitch.tv/ Spawn on Me. Ashley Birch for Horizon Zero Dawn playing Aloy. Totally not the right person for that category. Mm. She should have gotten the nod for her performance in Fortnite, which was way better than Aloy.
But
PUBG again shouldn't be in that category as far as best game because it's still like in the works.
But isn't it dope that the best performance is like four women,
and one dude? Yes,
like I think that's I think the industry should be like, yeah, we're making some dope ass women. Like I was very happy to see that.
Agreed on that. Like those are things that I'm super excited about. And newsflash,
right?
Two of the games that are going to be in the game of the year discussion, I can now play because I have a Switch. I switched it up, so now I'll be able to gush over the games like Zelda and Mario as well. What I'm actually interested to find out is more besides the game categories, is what Jeff Keighley is going to do with the actual kind of like performance and the kind of showing of the awards, because he seems to be getting bigger and better.
Right.
Every time that he goes out. So that is pretty awesome. And I'm curious to see how all that's going to look this time around. Because I feel like he has more stuff up his sleeve. And every year it just keeps getting wilder and wilder. Do you think that we're going to see something that's super, super like nuts in the space this year? Something that's going to be really crazy?
Nope. I don't.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, nope. Yeah, I don't. I mean, if this was still like the Spike Awards or something, sure, they'll have somebody jumping out of an airplane, playing PUBG, actually landing on an island and murdering 50 people, maybe. I like how Jeff runs the show. I don't anticipate there to be any major changes. I think every year it gets more and more polished. I'm almost looking forward to the fact that I kind of know what to expect, like kind of like the way that, you know, when you watch the freaking Tonys or the whatever, you know, Oscars or whatever, like you have a certain expectation of what is going to go on. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, like there might be some like exclusive world premiere.
Oh yeah.
You know, world premiere
trailers and that kind of stuff.
won't be a world premiere. Shout out to Play Games Patty in the chat. Yeah. He says, or how many times Jeff will mention Kojima.
Yes.
That is real. Yes. Yo, I want someone to love me like Jeff Keighley loves Kojima.
Word up.
Oh my God. That's going to be so crazy.
Word up.
Anyway, so we're about to jump into our break. We're going to come back in like a minute or two. Then we're going to dig into our buyer's guide for 2017. Cicero is going to explode into pieces of love, and that's going to be great. So everyone will be able to see that live on the show. So we'll be right back after this.
What's good, internet? This is Austin Walker, aka Professor Killer, aka David Foster Flawless, aka Bars Von Trier. You already know what it is. And since you do, you should also already know that Spawn on Me keeps it real when it comes to games, culture, and holding it down even when the world is on fire. Welcome to Chicago, y'all.
Welcome back, everybody, to Spawn on Me. This is episode 199 of our show. We just came back from our break. We had a lot of discussions. Loot boxes, gambling. It was like a madhouse up in here talking about all the stuff that we got into. One of the things that we wanted to do this year again is go into our buyer's guide. If you are familiar with what those are wonderful. They used to be paper. They used to be huge, big, like phone book style guides that would show you all the cool things that are coming up in this year. C is going to share some of his picks about what he thinks you should be purchasing for your loved ones this holiday season. So go on ahead, C.
Well, so, you know, we did this a couple of years ago. We did this, I think, in our very first year. We did basically an impromptu Chicago's buyer's guide. There were new consoles out. It was a new generation. African-American Friday was upon us. It was fast approaching. That is Black Friday for those of you who are uninitiated. You know, people look to us. They look to their great denizens of Chicago for guides and information and just help trying to navigate the muddy waters that are gaming in the holiday season. So we figured this time around with three new consoles, even if they're mid-generations, one a new console in its own right, are out. What are the merits of each, the pros and cons of each? And I thought it would be a great job of us, since each of us kind of champion naturally one console or another, talk about why their particular console, that the one that they champion, is the one that you should spend your hard-earned money on while you're waiting in lines this upcoming Friday or on Cyber Monday, or get ready, put in a list for Black Santa to bring to your Festivus poll this holiday season.
What?
So, myself, as everyone should know, myself, I prefer, my gaming choice is the Microsoft family of consoles. So I will be talking about the Xbox One X. Sharif, he is a full-on Nintendo file. So he will be talking about Nintendo's newest console, the Nintendo Switch. And Ka, who bleeds Sony blue, will be talking about the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 4.
I was
going to
talk about
Pro.
The Atari 2600. Oh, you get this Sony
you could talk about the 2600.
There's
shout
an Atari
to
box. Like they're making a new console.
Yeah, there you go. So you can talk about the box, the cardboard. It's cardboardy. So I think what we'll do is we'll start with, I think we should start with Khalif, because the PlayStation 4 Pro has been out the longest and is available and should be available at a discounted price. I think that the newest African-American Friday brochure from our favorite gaming retailer, GameStop, shout out to GameStop, has already said that the PS4 Pro will be available for $349.99 this holiday season, which, we all kind of, stubnosticated that it would be. Khalif Adams, great captain. Why should people buy the PlayStation 4 Pro?
Well, there's a couple of things that when I think about the PlayStation Pro that I feel are kind of the most important bits are, one, you get a higher fidelity on the games that you currently are already playing. It is interesting to see the conversation around the Xbox One X and the enhanced games when the PS4 previously had their enhanced Pro games that they touted out. They don't have as many, or they're not as good at advertising when things are getting kind of pro-ified, if that's the word that we're going to use. But I feel like the move that I went from the standard PS4 to the Pro has given me a lot more horsepower under the hood. I feel like everything runs much faster. I feel like my games, now that I have a 4K TV, I can absolutely see all the kind of wonderful things that I was missing in the games that I played prior to me having that television. Uncharted, which is a game that you should be getting and playing if you have a PS4, both the Lost Legacy and the vanilla game, that's a game that you should absolutely purchase. Horizon Zero Dawn is a game that you should absolutely purchase. It is a flagship game for that system as well. And I think that there are small little intricacies in the way that that system performs that I'm finding that I use on a daily basis as opposed to the other consoles that I currently have. If you are a person who likes to share out your gameplay, both through streaming and through capturing directly on the console, I feel like the way that the PS4 Pro does that is even better than the other parts of the competition. You can push that stuff out, not in 4K, but you can do it in 1080p60, which is great when you want to transfer that stuff over to Twitter, or if you want to push that stuff out directly to other places, pull it off the hard drive itself with a USB drive. Those things are fantastic, and it's easy. It's way better in the way that it works on the PS4, just naturally. And I think that currently the things that I'm finding the most interesting is that the social stuff that's in the PS4 has been really well done. It feels like the ability to find games on their store is better than I find on Xbox Live currently. But the hardware is just solid. It does exactly what it says it's going to do. It feels like I'm able to play everything in really high fidelity. The games don't crash as much as they used to. Some of them still do, but the patches that they've been putting out has been great. There's a lot of small things that makes that system feel like it's premium and feels like it's worth your money. So I would definitely say, you know, go out and check that stuff out.
All right. Well, okay. Well, there is a compelling case for the PlayStation 4 Pro. The next console that came out in order of newness, oldness, freshness was the little Switch that could. The Nintendo, go out there and pick me a Switch.
Wow.
Reef, you are our resident Nintendoian. You be Nintendo doing it. Why don't you talk about the Switch and why that is the console that consumers, that Precogoans, should be going out and purchasing this holiday season?
Sure. So if you guys were around when we were doing our predictions at the beginning of the year, at that point, you know, the Switch had, you know, like, there wasn't a lot out about it. You know, we thought it was going to have like a 3-game launch window. They hadn't really announced much. And I thought it was going to have a pretty rough year until the holiday season, when, you know, they would have at least a large game out, like Odyssey and stuff. And I've turned out to be pleasantly wrong. This year has arguably probably been the strongest first 9 months of a console that I can remember. And it's not just the fact that they have dropped, you know, a new Zelda and a new Mario game in the same year, both of which have gotten pretty rave like reviews. It's the fact that, you know, you have those huge kind of tempo games to lose yourself in, but you also have a ton of small indie games. I went on the Nintendo eShop and I was filtering by price, and I was surprised how there's not really a lot of $60 games. Like, most of the $60 games are the ones that you've mostly heard of. There are a lot of indie 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, you know? So I feel like that they've really diversified, you know, their offering, so that even if your budget is a little tight, there's some real quality games. I mean, I just bought Rocket League for $20.
Wow.
You know? You know, and you know, and now I have that, you know, on the go with me. I got LA Noir for $40, you know.
Right.
So, and that brings up a good point too, is that unlike the Wii U, which, you know, they did launch with later versions of these games that, you know, didn't look as good, and because, you know, the Wii U was still tethered to the TV, it had this forced comparison to everything else, and it was like, why would people buy these games if they're just worse, you know? But with the Switch, I think that Nintendo has really solved their power problem, because they're like, well, of course they don't look as good. Like, you could take them with you on the go, you know? Right. And they still look good on the TV. They don't, they obviously won't ever look as great as a PS4 or a One, let alone the Pro and the X. And, you know, there's no 4K support or HDR or like any of that stuff. Right. But the games look good. I mean, I've played Switch games on a 4K TV, and I was actually shocked that, like, they do look good. So I think that by having these older games on the go, like, I was sitting in the car dealership today playing Doom next to this old white guy.
How does it look?
That I think was terrified out of his mind, because I saw him kind of like glancing over while I was doing like like glory kills. So I think I traumatized this like poor gentleman that was like, oh my god, you have a fancy like Nintendo console. Oh my god.
Right. My stars.
Yeah. Yeah, so like the fact that these older games and like a lot of these games are games that I own on the PC and that look great and like play great, you know, but the chance to be able to play them while I'm, you know, waiting somewhere, or I'm in a coffee shop, or I'm, you know, at somewhere like a dealership, I'm at the laundromat, is really, really just it's increased the amount of time that I've spent gaming, which I love. Because now, like, when I get home from my work, you know, I'm spending time with my partner, I'm doing chores. You know, I don't always have as much time as I used to just sit down and play through, you know, a game like Assassin's Creed, which I'm playing now. But I was able to put so much time into, you know, Zelda and Mario Odyssey and ARMS and, like, Mario Kart, because I always have the thing on me. And if you play 5 minutes here, 30 minutes here, hour there adds up so fast, right. You know? So if anything, I think that the Switch is a console that will encourage you to game more, to enjoy good games more, you know, as like a busy, you know, adult. Yeah, I mean, I think that now that they've proven themselves, I think that 2018 from a third party perspective, especially, is going to be even stronger, because, you know, understandably, a lot of companies were very hesitant with the Switch because they thought that it might flop like the Wii U did. But I think that, like, now a lot of companies are on board. Like, Doom plays great on the Switch. You know, Skyrim comes out tomorrow, and, you know, and like NBA 2K is great. So I think that, you know, that, like, you will see more of these third party games, and like Nintendo just keeps on hitting with the first party as well. So while there won't be another year with a Mario and Zelda, so you won't have that, but you will have, you know, like your Xenoblades and your, you know, and your like Pokemon and like all these other like really, really large games. So yeah, I think that and of course that's sort of not mentioning like the fact that the games are designed for sort of local co-op, and a lot of them are family friendly. So, you know, it's the perfect thing to get someone into gaming that might not normally want to sit and watch you play Doom. So I think from that aspect, you know, because the other consoles really focus more on the online aspect, I think that if you're into like sort of gaming with a bunch of people in like a room, or bringing the Switch somewhere and, you know, and playing things on it, I think it's dope. So I think that like Nintendo has a very compelling case for your dollars.
Oh. Yeah. Nice. So no deals, at least that I've seen so far, for reduced prices on the console. So it's still $299.99.
Yeah, I haven't seen any deals. I can guarantee you, though, that there will be some like Zelda, Mario, Switch deals.
Bundles, yeah.
That I don't know if you'll save that much money on them. Right. But they'll probably have those around.
Right. All right. So the latest console to release just released a couple of weeks ago. And that was the console from the Emerald Princess up in the Pacific Northwest. That is Microsoft. That was the Xbox One X. And yours truly, as I've said or previously stated, will make the compelling case for why the Xbox One X is the definitive console that you should be buying this holiday season. And it goes a little something like this. If you're like me, you're lazy. Right?
Nice sales pitch. Right.
Yes. you enjoy the fidelity of PC games, of PC titles, but you don't want to spend the thousands of dollars that you need in order to keep your video cards updated. Upgrade your memory. Buy the latest monitor that does 4K, does 8K. You don't want all of that. You just want to sit down and put a game in or press a button, select the game, and just play it. The Xbox One X is perfect for that. It's going to play your games at the highest fidelity a home console could ever play them. Or will ever play them.
Ever.
Because it is.
Will ever play them. We've reached the singularity.
Right. Yes. Oh, but you know, all jokes aside, you know, the tagline was it was the most powerful console ever. It really, that is, it's an imperceptible thing to kind of wrap your head around without actually experiencing it. Much like VR, it really is. It really is the most powerful for the very first time in Microsoft's console gaming history. They have the most powerful console on the market, hands down. It's not even a question. And you're able to see that power when you're playing the games. If you can line up a game on a PS4 Pro and Xbox One X side by side, you'll see that it is challenged and rivaled only by the very best computers and a computer at that's comparably priced as the Xbox One X won't even be able to perform half as well as that console.
Agreed.
Now, here's the other thing that we need to think about. African American Friday is coming up. People are going to be going out and they're going to be buying televisions. You're going to be going out, you're going to buy 45-inch, you're going to buy a 50-inch, 60, 65, maybe even a 75-inch if you're balling. But you're going to go out, you're going to buy that hot new 4K joint. You want to be able to show that off, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to show that off, the only console for you is the Xbox One X because it's the only console that has 4K and HDR for your streaming, 4K and HDR for your gaming, and a 4K Blu-ray player. So you go out, you buy, you know, you get that hot deal at Sam's, Costco, or whatever the spot is, BJ, you know, BJ Costco. you get that deal. You get.
Was that in Wolfenstein?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah, he shot it up. He shot it up in, Homefront 3. So you bring that TV home, and you get a deal on a 4K Blu-ray play, 4K Blu-ray disc for Wonder Woman or whatever it is. You want to be able to bring that home and show everyone, show your significant other why you spent hundreds of dollars on this television. And why it's worth it. The only console that you're going to be able to do that with is the Xbox One X. So let's talk about media for 1 second. if you have Comcast in your home and you also are an HBO subscriber. So if you have Comcast cable and you're an HBO subscriber, the only console that you're going to be able to watch HBO Go on is the Xbox One X. So you can't do it on the PlayStation. So, it is the best of the best of your media streaming devices. It's your best 4K Blu-ray player. And then the other part of that that is great is, you know, the games load faster and all that other stuff. The Microsoft family of consoles allow you to play the Microsoft family of games. Backwards compatibility is a thing that, you know, we kind of poo-pooed. Is something that we talked about a lot over the last few generations, but we kind of fell away from. But now backwards compatibility is a live and real thing, because your games from yesteryear will look like they were made almost today with the upgrade and resolution and fidelity, thanks to the power of the Xbox One X. So not only will your 360 games, look better, but Xbox One games, OG Xbox games, look and play better on the Xbox One X. And the other thing is that for the other consoles, you can't play PS1 games on your PS4. You can't play PS2 games or PS3 games on your PS4. Maybe.
That's not true.
You can do the PlayStation Now, or you have to do it through a subscription.
Yeah,
PlayStation Now. Yes, PlayStation Now. You are correct. I take some of that back. I take some of it back. So you can do that with a subscription service. But they don't up-res them. They don't look great. And those are streaming, so it really depends on your internet connectivity to make sure that those games will play and be responsive for you. But speaking of subscription services, no one's talked about Xbox Game Pass. So you have Gamefly, you have Redbox. If you're somewhere in a time warp, you have a Blockbuster Video. You can get those games. But then Game Pass allows you to download those games directly to your hard drive, $14.99 a month, $100 for the year, or I think it's $120 for the year. And you get those games. There are plenty of games on the Game Pass. And, if you want to buy those games, you buy them at a discount. So here's the thing where you could just buy the Xbox One X. You buy your 4K TV on African American Friday, and you get your Game Pass subscription, and you don't even need to buy any games. You've got games right there. They're available for you that you can play in beautiful fidelity that will load very quickly, and you're future-proofing yourself for today, tomorrow, and the years to come. The Xbox One X, it is the definitive home gaming console. It is the console Bricagoans need.
Damn, he was about to be like kissing babies and stuff in a minute. He's like making sure you got all the stuff. Before we get up out of here and to wrap up the buyer's guide, what is the one game for your respective system that you feel is the must buy game for your console? I'm gonna start off with C since he just finished up the other part.
Yeah, more C.
Right. The definitive first party game?
What is just the game that you need to buy with your system?
If you are buying an Xbox One X, the game that you need to buy is Assassin's Creed Origins.
Okay.
Nice. I've heard great things about it. What about you? I'm just surprised that C went that whole time without saying Infinite.
I was
like on the edge of my seat. I was like, is he going to say Infinite? Is he going to say Infinite?
I zig when you think I'm going to zag, man.
Yeah. For me, I would say Super Mario Odyssey. I think Zelda is the superior game, but Odyssey has the broader appeal, and it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'd say that one.
On the PlayStation side, I think the game that you have to play, I think, is Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, I think that that game, in comparison to most games on that system, it is the evolution of what the Uncharted series had started off with in terms of graphical fidelity. But Horizon takes it to another level that we hadn't really seen on that console yet. So absolutely go cop that game, because it's a really good game and it's beautiful. I spent so much time in photo mode, probably more than I did in the actual game itself. So yeah, that was fantastic. I'm happy that we did that. I think that that was like a really good guide. You know, give this to the people in your lives that are still on the fence about whatever gaming system they think that they may want to get. I'm hoping that we made our arguments as clear as possible for everyone at home. And I think we're going to get up out of here unless anyone else has anything to add to the buyer's guide or anything else.
No. I think you guys did a good job.
Yeah.
Cool.
I just want to say really quickly, shout out to GameStop for killing the Power Pass program right after, like, before the episode where we talked about how it was a good thing aired. So shout out to y'all, man. That takes some chutzpah.
And shout out to me for, after talking all that shit about not going to GameStop, buying my Switch at a GameStop.
Hey, there you go.
So we've come full circle. Yeah,
right on.
So before we get up out of here, let everyone know what the social media business is, please.
Social media business is as follows. All of our social media platforms, you can follow Spawn on Me. We are there. If you want to follow us individually, check the bios. All of our information is right there. If you are a podcast listener, make sure you check us out at Spawn on Me on your podcatcher of choice. If it is a place where you can rate and review, please do so. Obviously, subscribe. And, of course, tell all your friends. You know, tell them to come to Twitch at 7:30 Pacific, 10:30 Eastern every Thursday. We will be here, except for next Thursday. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. If you, let us know how we're doing with your rates and your reviews, but let us know what console you bought this African American Friday, whether it was the Switch or the PlayStation 4 Pro or the Xbox One Infinite. By doing so, at our email address, spawnonmepodcast@gmail.com, and with the money that you saved this upcoming Black Friday, make sure you send some of it our way via our Patreon, patreon.com/spawnonme. Also, spawnon.me, that's our website, esn.fm/spawnonme.
Absolutely. Thank you again to everyone who's hung out with us today in the chat on Twitch. We have some really cool stuff coming up. We've been referencing the Spawnies, which is our Game of the Year show. We have a pretty special treat coming up for that. Remember to listen out for when that's going to go up online and when that's going to air. It'll be on the usual time, but we're trying to shoot for December 14th as the day for our Spawnies. So make sure to be right back here. And we may be a little bit pretty up in here, prettier than usual, I should say, on the stream. So we're going to get up out of here. Thank you to everyone in podcast land. Thank you so much for keeping us in the top of the iTunes charts every week. And again, thank you all for listening. We're going to get up out of here, and we'll say peace.
Peace. Peace.